Good morning. Today's daf and gittin is Chaf Beis. We are on the Mishnah on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. Thank Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learned Zeichan Ishmael Chlibik, Arbeel Abashmuel. The Mishnah starts off in Kosum and Mechubal Karka. You can't write again something which is connected to the ground. As we learned in the previous Mishnah, you can write again on nearly anything. Any item is a worthy item to write a get on. There's a minhag Yisrael. To write a get on a cloth, that's if anyone has ever seen a get. So you know that the get is nowadays written on a cloth, but you can write the get on any material. We gave examples in the previous Mishnah of writing on the horn of an animal, on the leaf of an olive tree. So you could pretty much write on anything. Now there are shitas who disagree with that, but the halach is you can write on anything. And now anything, however, is going to preclude. You can't write on something connected to the ground. In Kosum Chumla Karka, you cannot write on something which is connected to the ground. Now the reason why is because what we learned yesterday's daf. If you look at yesterday's daf, you don't have to turn the page. You could just stay right here and look towards the top of the amud. Because of an asan law, the Torah says that there are two verbs that are put back to back. One is you write the get. Number two is you give the get. And there can be no interposition. There can be no chatzitza between the two. The Gemara writes on the top of the amud because of an asan law. Misha ena mechuseh l'ksiva v'nesina. That means that there has to be a transition from the writing of the get and the delivery of the get. However, however, if you have to write and you have to be kotzitz and then you have to give, so now that is an intermediate action, and that's no good. The Gemara says it's based on the drasha that we learned in yesterday's daf. So the Mishnah over here says that ein kosum mechub l'karka, you can't write on something connected to the ground, because then you're going to have that interposition, you're going to have that chatzitza where it's going to be there's going to be chatzitza in the middle.
Olive tree, right?
All right, that's 12 lines is a minhag. We quote in the beginning of the Masechta. Tosfos quote in the beginning of the Masechta. It's an old minhag. It's a extraordinarily old minhag, but it's a minhag. So the kasvu b'mechubar toshav v'chasmu v'nasal akasha. Now the Mishnah then confuses us, because right after the Mishnah saying don't do it, the Mishnah then says, now if you write on something connected to the ground and then you pluck it out of the ground and then you sign it, so line, then you give it to her kasha, so it'd be kasha. So obviously, right now at this juncture of the Mishnah, we should be confused. We are confused. The Mishnah started off by saying don't do it, then the Mishnah says, and if you did it, it's okay. So obviously those two points in the Mishnah need reconciliation. When we get to the Gemara, we're going to attempt. Rabbi Yehuda posel ad shetek suvasa v'chasima so betolosh. Rabbi Yehuda says it is no good until the writing and the chasima are done after detachment. But if you write it while it's detached and then afterwards you detach it, so according to Rav Yehuda, that is no good. Rav Yehuda ben Becerra, Omer in Koson lo al anir amachuk v'lo al hadiftera. Rav Yehuda ben Becerra is going to prohibit other types of parchments that are not going to be good to write on. You cannot write on niyar machuk, on a paper that was erased. The problem with erased paper, you take a look at the Rashi over here. Rashi writes, "Yachol lachzor lamolcho," because once it's erased, so then it's subject to a second erasure. You can, and nobody's going to know the difference. So ad ha'edim lakoso v'yavir tanai shahayabo, and what you could do with that second erasure is that you can remove a condition, meaning that let's envision, says Rashi, that the get was written with a condition written into the get as well. Now, if you're writing on erased paper, so that means that a second erasure is not going to be noticed. There was a condition written on the get. Nobody knew that there was a condition written on the get because we erased it. Now, again, nobody notices because witnesses are, the whole parchment is erased. So the second erasure is not going to be noticed. And the same thing is true with diftera. Diftera will explain a little bit later on in today's daf what exactly that is. But again, the same issue, the same problem, is that nobody's going to notice an erasure on such a document, and the problem now is that if there was a condition and the condition was erased, so now it looks like a perfectly good get, and the problem is that there was a condition written on the get. It was just erased. Now, a get with a condition, we learned yesterday, if there's a string attached that it connects them for the rest of their lives, such a get is not going to be good. But if it's a temporary condition is in fact binding. The condition is binding. and the get will not be a get until the condition is satisfied. Well, if there was a condition written on the get and it was erased, so now we can imagine the problem that would result. That everyone thinks the get's a good get because you look at the get and it looks perfectly good, but meanwhile there was a condition that was erased that went unsatisfied, and therefore the get's not going to be a valid get. Okay, so you can't. The basic idea, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, is that you can't write on paper where erasure is not going to be noticed. If a chachamim machshir and the chachamim say no, that's fine. Even if the paper is prone to this kind of issue, according to the chachamim, that would be fine. Why should that be fine? Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra's concern over here seems to be an extraordinarily legitimate concern, that if you don't notice an erasure on a paper, so therefore you can't use it. Sounds reasonable. So once again, stay tuned. We're going to discuss that at the end of today's daf. We are at the Gemara. We're starting with the Gemara today. Kasul mechubar v'amart reisha in ein kosven. So the Gemara right away jumps on the issue surrounding the Mishnah, point one and point two in the Mishnah. Point one of the Mishnah is don't write again on something connected to the ground because it doesn't work, like we mentioned at the beginning of today's daf. And meanwhile, the second half of the Mishnah, not the second half, but the second point of the Mishnah is that if you write something connected to the ground and you detach it and then you sign it and then it's good. What? Why should it be good? So I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel v'hushe shir makam hatorev v'chein Amar Rav Elazar Amar Rav Yoshe v'hushe shir makam hatorev v'chein Amar Rabba Babarchan Amar Rav Yochan v'hushe shir makam hatorev. So a number of Amoraim, the Gemara strung together at least three Amoraim, who are all of the opinion that you didn't write out the entire get, meaning on the while it was connected to the ground, whatever you're writing on, let's say papyrus, while it's connected to the ground, so you wrote not the entire get. Now, the get is divided into two parts. I think this is the first time in the Masechta that we're familiarizing ourselves with this terminology, and that's the tofes and that's the tareth. Tofes, that's the standard wording of a get. The get has a standard formula, right? It's 12 lines of, as we mentioned a couple minutes ago, and most of it is just standardized formula of a standard get. And then there's the tareth, and then there's the essential part of the get, which is the names. Harei Mateus L'chol Adam, she's permitted to marry whomever she wants. Rashi says you could put the date also is included in this essential information. So there is personalized information which really gives the get its kawach, its power, and that's called the toreif. That's the main component of the get, the revealed part of the get, if you will. But the critical component. And then there's the tofes. The tofes is just simply the other part of the get, which is just standard formula of that which you write. So what the Gemara now is saying is here's the Pshat in our Mishnah. The Pshat in our Mishnah is that we are talking not where you wrote the entire get while it's connected to the ground. If you did so then it's no good. Like we mentioned yesterday's daf, like we're saying right now. What the Mishnah here is describing is I wrote most of the get while connected to the ground, but not the toreif, not the essential parts, not names, not dates. V'Rav Elazar hi. Now, in terms of authorship of the Mishnah, our Mishnah is going like Rav Elazar. Here we go once again. Basic machlokas, which we're going to see time and again throughout the Masechta, and that is, what is the koach haget? How does the get create severance between husband and wife? It's either Eidei Chasim or it's Eidei Mesira. So Rav Elazar Damar Eidei Mesira Karte. So Rav Elazar is of the opinion that the Eidei Mesira Kareis, which means that according to Rav Elazar, you don't need witnesses signing on the document. Okay, those are not critical. According to Rav Elazar, as we mentioned earlier, you don't even have to have witnesses signing on the document. Now, once you do have witnesses signing on the document, as we mentioned earlier, according to Rav Elazar, so they have to be kosher witnesses, they can't be possible witnesses, even though they're not necessary. But, according to Rav Elazar, what is the koach haged is the Eidei Mesira, is the witnesses who see the transfer of the get. So, v'hachi kamer ein kosven tofei shem yichtov taref. So, here's the problem. They can't write the tofes of the get because you may end up writing the Torah while still connected to the ground. Kasul atofes v'talshu, kasul atorev v'nasnala, kasher. So, but if you wrote the tofes while it was still connected to the ground, then you were toast, then you uprooted it, and then you wrote the Torah, and then you give it to her, kasher, that would be kasher. That is the opinion according to Rav Elazar. Now, according to Rav Elazar, let's think this through. The Torah says the kasul of law. Now, according to Rav Elazar, what is the kasul of law going on? So, Remember, according to Rav Elazar, what is the key? What is the key ksiva going on? Your two options is it's going on the writing of the get or it's going on the signing of the get. According to Rav Elazar, Ede Mesire Karte, which means that it's the Edom seeing the delivery of the get. They're the critical ones. So when the Torah side describes Vikasov, what is that going on? It's not going on the signing of the get, because according to Rav Elazar, you don't even need them to sign on the get. What it must be going on is the actual writing of the body of the get. That's the critical part, according to Rav Elazar. But now what we're saying is, even within that sheet of Rav Elazar, we could divide the get into two parts, the Toreif and the Toface. Toface, that's a standardized text of a get. That, even according to Rav Elazar, can be done in not the best of conditions. In this case, we're talking, while it's still connected to the ground, even that would be fine according to Rav Elazar. However, once you get to the Toreif, and the Torah says Vikasov law, then that ksiva of the Toreif has to be, while the get is in kasher condition. Kasher condition in this case means while disconnected from the ground. That's how we're going to set up our Mishnah. Okay. V'reish Lakish Amar. I'm sorry. Yeah, that is so far one understanding of our Mishnah. This understanding, again, let's give proper attribution, is Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yoshia, Rabbi Barbachana, Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, a whole string of Amoraim who all understand the Mishnah this way. Good. The Gemara, however, is going to give another way to understand the Mishnah, and that is Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish Amar, Chismu Shaninu, Rabbi Meirhi. Now, when the Mishnah here talks about Chasima, the Chasima is understood as a signing, and our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir. Now remember, Da Amar Edi Chasima Karte. The Gemara goes on to explain that according to Rabbi Meir, Edi Chasima are Kores, which means that according to Rabbi Meir, when the Torah says V'kasav La, and you're going to write for her again, according to Rabbi Meir, what is that describing? It's not describing the writing of the get. Obviously, you need to write a get. That goes without saying. Without the writing of a get, you have no document to give to her. But that's not the koach haget. The koach haget is the signatures who are signing on the bottom. When the Torah says v'kasav la, you're going to write for her with the get already written. The Torah is describing the signatures. It's the signatures on the bottom of the document that gives the get its koach, that creates severance between husband and wife. That means that according to Rebbe Meir, how are you going to work our Mishnah out? Very simply. Our Mishnah means that you write the get while connected to the ground, because again, according to Rebbe Meir, writing of the get is not halachically significant. It's not a fulfillment of the pasuk of the kasav law. Then you detach it from the ground. Then you have witness signing on it, and then you're fine. Now nothing is separating the ksiva, which is going on the signatures, and the nesina and the giving to her. And the Gemara goes on to say, you shouldn't write the Torah while it's connected to the ground. Because the problem is that once you write the Torah, if you may sign it while connected to the ground. Kosher. But if you wrote the get while connected to the ground in its entirety, sans the signature, then you detach it, then you have the witnesses signing on it, according to Rav Meir, even though you should not have done that, but the fact of the matter is that the chasima was done after detachment, therefore it's good. Two different ways to understand the Mishnah, and really what the two different ways are reflecting is whether you subscribe to Rav Elazar's position or Rav Meir's position. As we mentioned earlier, the halacha goes like Rav Elazar. It is strange that Reish Lakish would be mamid our Mishnah like Rabbi Meir. When the halacha goes like Rav Elazar, I guess in defense of Reish Lakish, you would say that Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, that an anonymous Mishnah follows like Rabbi Meir, so even though it's not the halachically accepted position, but still, better than our Mishnah should follow Rabbi Meir, because that's the generally how anonymous Mishnayos work.
It's
not an issue. Kenyan is not the issue. The issue is not Kenyan. The issue is that there's a halacha by get that the kasav of anasnu, that there can be nothing separating between the ksiva and the nesina. And once you, a detachment is an action that would come in between. So it has to be detached. One has to be detached. So that's the machlokus between the Tanaim, which is reflective of how to understand the Mishnah. Okay. Continuing now in the Gemara. Kasvu acheres shel atzitz nakov. Okay. For a good part of today's daf, we're going to go off the board. We're going to leave the world of our Mishnah and the discussion of the Mishnah. We're going to come back later this morning to our Mishnah. But we're going to have nearly an amud of discussion in the Gemara from here until basically the bottom of Chav Beis Aman Aleph. We're going to have a discussion of how to treat, I guess for, not a lack of better term, but just to help us remember, holy pots. Okay, holy pots over here. I don't mean spiritually holy. I mean physically. They're holy. They have holes in it. Generally speaking, we've discussed this before. This is a popular topic in Shas, if you will. This is a discussion of when you have a plant, when you have anything growing in a pot. So the pot obviously is not in the ground. It's not connected to the ground, and as a result of that, it's not viewed as a chelik of Eretz Yisrael. All agricultural halachas are not applicable to something growing in a pot. Okay, that's a starting point of the discussion. But then once the pot has holes in it, so now those holes create a communication between the ground and that which is in the pot. Does the holy pot actually have to be sitting on the ground itself? Generally speaking, the answer to that is no. It doesn't even have to. Meaning either be communication even through the air. But as long as the pots have holes in it, so the understanding is that generally now there's a yinika, there's a nourishment between the contents of the pot and the ground below. And as a result of that, it's considered connected to the ground. So now we are going to be discussing it really in the context of two different halachas. There's so many halachas we could be discussing this in. We're discussing Gittin right now, not having nothing to do with agricultural halacha, nothing to do with Shabbos halacha. We're just discussing the idea that I can't detach something from the ground. So here now, in the context of Gittin, here comes the discussion. Kitzwa acherishel atzitz nakov. So I wrote it on on the shard of a pot that holes in it. So kasher. De shakole v'yayiv le'niale, because what I'll do is I'll just simply pick it up and I'll give it and I'll hand it over. Take a look at the last Rashi and the Amud. De shakole l'kulei atzitz, because here what we're going to do is we're going to pick up the entire pot. In other words, what's the big deal? We'll pick up the entire pot and the man will hand it over to her. V'einkan mechusar ketzitza. Now over here, even though in other areas of halacha, it's considered connected to the ground, in this halacha, meaning in Gittin, in the world of Gittin, this is fine. Because the only thing that is the only thing that is a problem in the world of Gittin is ketzitza, where I need to physically cut it from the ground. That's going to be a problem. Over here, there may be a halachic connection between the pot and the ground. And in terms of Shabbos, and in terms of other agricultural halachas, they may be connected. But in the area, in the world of Gittin, it is not considered a connection. And therefore, you just simply pick it up and give it to her. Now, Rashi is interesting. Rashi, will just read the end of the Rashi. The Enka Mechusa Ketzitza. The Ein Lachusha, then Rashi goes on to say, and also here's something that we're not going to be concerned with. The Ein Lachusha Meishaber Acheres. Well, maybe I'm going to break the cheres apart. The yitin laha chaticha, and I'm going to give her just the section that has the get written on it. The havila ketzitza de lo mafsi leila atzitz. And then that's considered ketzitza, and Rashi says, and we're not worried about that. Meaning, what you'll do is you'll hand her the whole pot. Much like we discussed in yesterday's daf, you'll write the get on the horn of the cow, and you'll hand her the whole cow. Right, the I mentioned yesterday, I'll just mention again quickly today, there's a lengthy Tosos on the Amud, on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, that discusses the following. We learned that anytime there's a ketzitza between the ksiva and the nesina, that's no good. That's what we learned yesterday, we learned it again today. What if I write on a big piece of paper, I don't fill out the entire paper with a get, I write the get only on a section of it, and then I cut it out, and then I give it to her. Is that going to be a problem? So Tosfos yesterday, right on the Amud. So Tosfos has a lengthy discussion. From this Rashi over here, it would seem like from this Rashi that would be a problem, because Rashi says I write on the pot, the get on the pot, and I can hand it to her. The Chiddush of the Gemara is it's not considered detachment from the ground, even though the pot is holy. It's not considered detachment because all I'm doing is just picking up the pot. Rashi says, and I'm not worried that I may just simply break off the shard and hand her that piece of shard. It sounds like from Rashi that if I did break off the shard and I give it to her, that would be no good. So it sounds like from Rashi. Okay, again, you can, you know, I could certainly make the argument that if you write on a piece of paper and you cut it out from the paper, it sounds like from Rashi. That would be no good. Again, that goes back to Tosis's discussion yesterday. Okay, let's go on the Gemara. Al aleishel atzitz nakuf. Let's say you write the get. Again, we're talking about a perforated pot. All these pots are going to be perforated. They're all holy. So the but here, I don't write it on the pot itself. I write it on a leaf, that on a tree that's growing within a pot. And the pot is holy. So, Abaye Amar Kasha, Rav Amar Pasa. So here we have a Machlokas Amarayim. Now, Abaye Amar Kasha, now Abaye's position is the Shaka Levi Ayv, Le Nialei. Abaye's position, relatively easy to understand, because here's what you're going to do. You'll handle the whole plant. Right, it's here. You're good. You're good by present to her. Is that you wrote the get on only one leaf, but you're going to pick up the whole pot and you're going to hand it over to her. That's Abai's position. Rava says no. Rava Amar Pasuk Zer Meshem Yikto. Rava says, look, here I'm concerned because previously when we discussed writing on the pot itself, so then I can easily understand how you're going to pick up the pot and hand it over to her. Here, however, you only wrote it on a leaf, on a plant growing in the pot, and now you're thinking to yourself, I'm going to give her all that? That's a lot. Right? And
I'm giving it.
Right, correct, right. So in other words, Rav is concerned that what I may end up doing is I may just end up cutting off that one leaf and giving it to her. So since we're so concerned about that, so Rav says that you should not, it's a gzera derabban that you should not do that.
The leaf is perishable.
Okay, right. So we didn't discuss this, but in other words, you should write the get on something which is long lasting. So you're right. No need to keep the get forever.
So it doesn't matter.
But yeah, but still, it should be written. Just like the ink should be permanent, the object you write on should be permanent. It should be a lasting. It should be a lasting document. In fact, later we're going to talk about that. How
she doesn't need it.
Agreed. But it's in principle, should be written on something that lasts. Okay, atzit shel echav v'zarim shel echad. Okay, and so here now the Gemara. After having discussed perforated pots, so the Gemara is going to just kind of stay focused, even though when I say focused, I mean we're moving away from the mission, we're moving away from the discussion, but stay now focused on this idea of perforated pots. So here we begin. Let's say the pot belongs to somebody, or to one person, and the zraim belongs to somebody else. So the seeds within the pot. Okay, and halachically, they are two now totally different items. The pot itself is not part of the ground. In other words, you pick up the pot, you put it down. Now, the pot has holes in it, that's wonderful, but when all said and done, the pot is considered metaltal, it's movable items. What about the seeds? Well, the seeds are connected to the ground, halachically, because the pot has holes in it, and we view those holes as it creates communication now between the soil in the pot and the soil in the earth, and now the seeds are considered part of the ground. So now, basically, the pot is metaltal, the seeds are karka. And if you know the halacha, so you'll know, and we're going to go through them right now, that they're viewed differently. So bal atzit, so I'm sorry, macher bal atzit so bal zrayim. So if the owner of the pot sold it to the owner of the seeds, kevin shemashach kana. So how do you make a kinyan over there on the pot? Mishicha, meaning it's a movable item. So the only way that you make kinyanim by movable items is through picking it up and pulling in your direction. It's called mishicha. Macher bal zrayim la bal atzit. However, if the seeds are sold to the pot owner, so lo kana shiachzik bizraim. So there now, the seeds are considered karka. How do you make a kinyan by karka? Not mishicha. You write kinyan by karka is one of three ways: kesef, shtar, v'chazaka. Either money or document or chazaka. Chazaka here, it's always just confusing. But chazaka over here means a proprietary act, right? We generally think of chazaka as a 3-year squatter, but that's a special halacha in terms of establishing ownership of land. Chazaka in terms of how to acquire a land means a proprietary act: building a fence around a property, digging in the property, doing something that reflects that you are now the owner of it. So that's what the Gemara means over here. That if you want to make a kinyan on the seeds, since the seeds are karka, so therefore you have to do a proprietary act. Now, let's say that the seeds and the pot belong to one person, and he sells it to another person. So, So here now, if you want to sell both the pot and the seeds, so the pot is considered movable. The seeds are considered karka, so we have what's known as a kinyan agav, that if I'm selling property and movables, and I'm selling them together, and a kinyan on the property creates a de facto kinyan on the movables that are on the property. Kinyan agav. Kiddushin, we'll discuss it at length. Here the Gemara just makes reference to it. So I can now make a kinyan on the seeds. I know it's, in this particular case, it is a little counterintuitive. But I make a kinyan on the seeds, which are karka, and then the pot comes along with it, because that's how kinyan agav works. Hichzik ba'atzitz, af atzitz lo kana, ashi yachzik b'zrayim. So let's say I do a proprietary act regarding the pot. Now the pot is immovable, and the pot is not open to the proprietary act. The pot needs meshicha. So if I do a chazaka on the pot, so not only do I not acquire the pot, I don't acquire the seeds as well. Because agav only works where the movables come together with the property. Properties don't come together with the movables. So the Gemara says, here, you got neither. Nikva ba'aretz v'nofa b'chus la'aretz. Okay. This is, again, another popular topic that comes up throughout Gemara, and that is trunk or branches, right? In this case, roots or branches. What's the defining point of a tree? So if the nekev is in Eretz Yisrael, and the nof and the branches are going outside of Eretz Yisrael, so this tree is planted right on the border, so the roots are in Eretz Yisrael, but the branches are hovering over Chutz Aretz. Abaye Amar Basa Nikva Azlinan, Rav Amar Basa Nofa Azlinan. So the Gemara here brings a machlokes between Abaye and Rava, whether we go after the branch or whether we go after the roots. Rava follows the branches. Bida Ashrush Kol Amalo Pligi. So the Gemara then qualifies this debate. If it's rooted in the ground, we have no debate whatsoever. Ki Pligi Bida Lo Ashrush. We're talking about where it's not rooted in the ground. The Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Bida Ashrush Lo Pligi. Really, if it's not rooted, then we don't have a debate. Vatanan. We have a Mishnah Shtegina Ze Al Gav Ze. Let's say I have two gardens. They are contiguous. They're connected one to the other. However, they're not on parallel ground. One is higher than the other. And there's kind of like a horizontal connection between the two. The Yerik main time. Now, on the horizontal that exists between these two properties, so there is vegetation growing out of that horizontal. Now, I am...
Elevation, right?
On the elevation. There's vegetation growing on the elevation. Now, if I'm the owner, let's say I'm the owner of the upper one, and it's growing out of my property. In other words, I own the higher one, and Phil, you own the lower one. Now, it's growing out of my property. Now, it's not growing in the normal vertical direction. It's growing horizontally out of my property into your airspace. And so the Mishnah Bava Metzia discusses, it's a classic discussion, right? I'm sure your neighbor's branches are going into your property, and you kind of, you know, you can easily relate to this Mishnah. So now the question becomes, who is the owner of this vegetation? So Rameir, Amar Shal, Yom Rav Yehuda, Amar Shal Tachton, you knew this was going to be a machlokas. this one was easy to, you know, to prognosticate. Rameir says it belongs to the upper one, Rav Yehuda says it belongs to the lower one. So what do we have over here? We have something that clearly is rooted into the ground, and meanwhile, the Mishnah Bava Metzia has a machlokas in terms of who the rightful owner is. How can you tell me that Bida Ashrish, when something is rooted in the ground, we have no debate? Abaye and Rava says there's no debate. What do you mean there's no debate? It's a Mishnah. These are Tanayim. They're debating. So the Gemara says, Hasam Kediktani Time. The Gemara says, no. Over there, that debate is very specific to that case for the following reasons. Amar Meir, because now all we're going to do is just read on in the Mishnah. And we're going to see that the Mishnah over there employs arguments. And the arguments go as follows. Amar Meir Ma Im Yirtzeh El Yon Li Tol Asaf Ro In Kan Yeret. The owner of the upper property, the one where the vegetation is actually growing on, he says, you know, I could rent out an earth mover, and I could just take out the earth, and there'd be no vegetation over there. Meaning it's growing out of my ground, and I could easily just take away the ground. which means I'll be taking away the vegetation that's growing there. So obviously it belongs to me. And I'm Rav Yehuda Maim Yirtzah Tachton Lamalo says Gina So Offer Ein Kan Yerek. So and the one on the lower says, you know, I own this property, and I own this property not just the ground level. I own it going up, right? In other words, property goes up. Ad l'shamayim. Rishus Yachid. I know this is a Shabbos halacha. It's not necessarily germane to our topic, but Rishus Yachid is ad l'shamayim. Ad l'rakia. It just goes up. Properties, you own not only the ground, but you own all the airspace going up as well. So the one living in the lower property could say, look, your vegetation is growing in my airspace. I own my airspace. If I wanted to, I could have filled that airspace with dirt, and then you'd have no vegetation. So clearly I'm the owner. So in terms of that scenario where both properties are owned by different people and each one has a reasonably sound argument in terms of why they should be the rightful owner. The Gemara says, But that's a localized machlokas for that particular scenario. We're talking about, in general, how to view trees and branches in terms of where they are, what should determine where they are planted. So the Gemara says, in general, if it's not a neighboring property dispute, if it's just a general issue of, do I follow the trunk, do I follow the branches, if the trunk is rooted in the ground, then there's no machlokas. The roots in the ground are going to determine ownership. The akati b'da'ashir shlo pligi v'atayin, the Gemara says, okay, but let's learn another mission together. Ilam iksasa ba'aretz imiksasa b'chutz aretz. If I have a tree where half of it is planted in Eretz Yisrael, half of it's planted outside of Eretz Yisrael. So here the tree is actually on the border, and right, when you cross the GW, so you know you have that sign that says "Welcome to New York." In other words, there's some line that separates New York and New Jersey. So here the tree's on the border. So what happens now with the fruit growing on the tree? Tevel v'chulam ravin zebezeh. Divrei Rebbe. Rebbe says the fruit growing on that tree. So it depends on which side of the border you're on. If it's outside of the fruit growing outside of Eretz Yisrael, that fruit does not have kedushas Eretz Yisrael. The fruit are not subject to trumas and maisos. The fruit growing in Eretz Yisrael are subject to trumas and maisos. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Agada bechiyav chiyav, Agada bepater pater. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says anything that grows in chiyav is chayav. Anything that grows in pater is pater. So I'm sorry. I flipped Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon Gamliel. Rebbe Shimon Gamliel said what I just said, meaning it depends on which side it is. Rebbe's of the opinion, I presented it incorrect. Rebbe's of the opinion that all the fruit are going to be an admixture of tevel and chulin mixed together. Okay, now my lad makes us know for baritz, it makes us know for bechutz aretz. So the Gemara assumes that it must be that the branches also, just like the tree itself, half of it is inside, half outside of Eretz Yisrael. Same thing is true regarding the branches. Lo, mixes sharsha be'aretz, mixes sharsha b'chutz la'aretz. My time, the Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Gemara says no. Here we're discussing where the tree itself half was in and half was out. And here the discussion, the nekuda machlokas is the following. So Rav Shimon Gamliel, the mafsik sunama. My time, the mafsik sunama. Rav Shimon Gamliel says as follows. Not only is the tree on the border, but basically, if we were to excavate and we were to look subterranean, we would see that there's actually bedrock underneath, and actually the roots of the part of the tree that are in Chutz La'aretz are going into Chutz La'aretz and do not get a yinika from Eretz Yisrael. And the roots that are in Eretz Yisrael are getting and only getting a yinika from Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says that's a scenario. So my time is the Rebbe. So the Gemara says now, if that's true, so how does Rebbe, why does Rebbe say that everything that grows on the tree is half-half, half chul and half tevel? So dehadja arve. So the Gemara says because as you have, I'm going back to high school biology, but as you have the nutrients going up and down the tree through the xylem and phloem of the tree, so Rebbe basically says that even though nourishment is coming from roots outside of Eretz Yisrael and nourishment is coming from roots inside of Eretz Yisrael, as those nutrients go into the tree, they're ma'urav, they get mixed one to another. And therefore the fruit is there, all fruit growing on the tree, regardless of where the fruit are growing, are going to be a hybrid of Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. That's Shita's Rebbe. But my kamiflagim are savar avir, mevavo, masavar, hai luchudekai v'haluchudekai. And the Gemara says, and the machlokas is, It seems to be a machlokas in Metzius. I know we always like to avoid that, but the machlokas is whether or not the nutrients actually mix within the tree or no. Do the nutrients that are coming from Eretz Yisrael remain only on that side of the tree? And the nutrients coming from Eretz Yisrael only remain on that side of the tree. Gemara says that's a machlokas. Again, all this because of we discussed the potted the holy pot in the beginning. In other words, writing the get on the pot itself. We picked up the pot. You handed it to the woman as a get. So the Gemara then went on to a number of tangential discussions regarding how to view a tree planted in the ground. One more tangential discussion. No, we're pretty much done. Rav Yehuda ben Becerra Omer. No, we are done. Okay, back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah brought in the position of Rav Yehuda ben Becerra. Amar Rav Chiya bar Asi Mishmei De'ula Gimel Orosein. When you're talking about the hide that comes off an animal, so there are three terms that we're going to learn. We learned this back in Shabbos. We're going to learn this again right now. And the three terms describing the hide of an animal is Matza, Chifa, and Diftara. Okay, so those are three different terms, and the Gemara goes and defines each one of these terms. Matzah kemashma'o. So matzah, just like it indicates. It's funny. Matzah, just like it indicates. So we think matzah, we think matzah. The Gemara over here says, you know, no, we're talking about hides. We're describing hide in a certain state. But much like you think about the matzah on Pesach, so too, when you're thinking about the hide, think of it in this context. Delo maliach, udelo kemiach, udelo afitz. Basically, not processed at all. It's the simplest form of the hide. There's no salting, there's no processing. And the afitza is, we discussed this already a number of times, right? Treating it with gallstone.
Gallnut.
I know. I'm just laughing at myself. Treating it with gallnut juice. Okay, that's the final treatment of the parchment. So there basically are three different processes of the treatment of hide of an animal. So when we say matzah, it means it went through no treatment whatsoever. Okay, lemai hilchasa. Now the Gemara says, now when we talk about matzah, what halachic application does it have? Lotza Shabbos. So this takes us back to Shabbos when we talked about carrying on Shabbos, right? The Mishnah methodically goes through item after item explaining what is the smallest amount that if I were to carry that item, I would be chayv on Shabbos on the malacha of Hotza'ah. So when we're talking about unprocessed hide, so Hilchus Lotza Shabbos, Vekama Shira Kediktani Rav Shmuel, Bar Yehuda Kedei Latzor Mishkal Ketana, Vekama Amarabai Ki Riv'ah. It's basically a small satchel that carries the smallest weight. It's the quarter of a quarter, it's a 16th of a weight that's used in pumpadisa. Anyway, a small satchel that carries a weight that is the smallest utilitarian use of this unprocessed hide. Next, chipa. The malich v'lo kemich v'lo afitz. Chipa is where it was salted, but it didn't go through any other processing. Lamai hilchus alo tzah Shabbos. Now, in terms of Shabbos, once again, v'kamash yor kedinan or kedei lasos kemeya. Back then, popular was it to write an amulet. Somebody was sick, somebody was suffering, whatever. So they would have an amulet written for them. The Gemara Shabbos spent a lengthy amount of time discussing the science, if you will, it's a funny word to use, but the science of amulet writing. So, but anyway, but you know, what is the smallest shear of this ore, of this semi-processed hide? So the amount that you would need to write an amulet on it. Diftara, demalich v'kimich v'lo afitz. Now, diftara is nearly finished processed hide. It went through the processing of salting and kimiach, whatever that is, and But it didn't go through the gallnut treatment. And here, in order, the shear is to write a get. So now, writing a get, right? If you look back at our Mishnah, right, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, so, or I should say, Rav Yehuda ben Becerra of our Mishnah says that you're not allowed to write a get on such a thing. So as Rashi points out over here, that the author of the Mishnah on Shabbos is holding like the Chachamim of our Mishnah. The Chacham of our Mishnah allowed it, right? Look at the second to last Rashi in the Amud Lichtav Alav Ezeged. Rashi writes, Kirabanan, Demachshere. Meaning, obviously, the Mishnah and Shabbos is holding like the Chacham of our Mishnah. Umiyo Klav Gamer, Demalich, Vekmech, Vafitz, Lo Shmei, Or. Rashi just helps us out over here, that if it went through the full processing of a hide, it went through salt and kamiach and golna juice, so that's not even, it's not considered ore anymore. So that's why it's not in that particular series of Mishnayos. Now that's klaf, meaning that's what we classically refer to as klaf. So there, Rashi points out that the Mishnah tells us that parsha katana, smallest amount of what you would write a parsha katana, which is tefillin. Aval diftera inu kashal tefillin helkach shiro beget. Now diftera you can't write tefillin on because it's not klaf. So diftera, so there you write it. You can write again on it, at least according to the chachamim of our Mishnah. Okay, and with this we're almost going to wrap up today's daf. Chachamim machshirin man chachamim. Who is the author of our Mishnah in the Shita of the Chachamim? Let's remember. In our Mishnah, the Chav, we had a machlokas about paper which is subject to erasure, where you can erase it and no one's going to notice. So Rav Yehuda ben Bisteira says, don't use it. Now, why not? So again, just to remind ourselves, Rashi told us back in the Mishnah, because if nobody notices, like if I erase the paper, so then it could be that the get not only was a get, but also had a Tanai written as well. And then what the unscrupulous husband or wife, whichever one's going to do, is just simply erase the Tanai, even though it was written there, even though it was signed on, erase the Tanai, and everyone's going to think that this is a legitimate get. And meanwhile, there was a Tanai, and nobody knew about it. So Rav Yehuda ben Bisteira says, if it's paper, if it's a type of parchment where no one's going to notice the eraser, don't use it. That's the Shita of Rav Yehuda ben Bisteira. And the Chachamim say, no, it's okay. And what we're now going to try to understand is why. Why is it okay? Rav Yehuda ben Bisteira's position seems to be very sensible. So v'chachamim amachshirin man chachamim. So who is the author of that part of the Mishnah? So Rebbe Elazar. Yeah, I'm sorry. Right, man chachamim ama Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Elazar he. Okay, I know that was a little confusing, but Rebbe Elazar the Amora identifies the author of our Mishnah as the Shita of Rebbe Elazar. That it's the Eda Mistira which are Kares. Let's take a look together at the top Rashi. Right? Amar Chasimas Aget Eno Min HaTorah. According to Rebbe Elazar, as we've said time and again throughout the Masechta, the signing of the document is not Min HaTorah. It's not a requirement. You don't need witnesses, according to Rebbe Elazar. So, v'lo sagla misve below eda misira. You cannot give a get, according to Rebbe Elazar, without eda misira. Eda misira is the koach haget. It's what's giving the get its efficacy. De inu hu de av de krisus. They are what's creating severance between husband and husband and wife. De al karchach minam eden diafina and erva david avim mimamon. We know we need witnesses. Which witnesses? According to Rebbe Elazar, the eda misira. The okach lo chayshin lo duma mazayfa. Now, if all this is true, so then we don't have to worry about counterfeit and forgery and any type of manipulation of the document. Why? De haman and strich lemikre. Because Rashi reminds us what we learned yesterday's daf, right? Yesterday, 2 days ago. But we just did in the Gemara that there's a requirement to read the get prior to the delivery of the get. Now, if there was any condition written in the get, these witnesses are going to know because they read it, and immediately after reading it, they're going to sign. Signature is not even right. I myself got caught up. Right? They're going to give it in front of these two, and they're going to know whether or not there was a condition or not. Now Rashi says, now according to Rav Elazar, that means now that if the Eidim Mesira are the critical component of a get, let's say she wants to remarry and she wants proof that she got a divorce. So what does she need to bring? The Eidim Mesira. Meaning according to Rav Elazar, the get obviously is part of the process, but it's not the critical component. Critical component, according to Rav Elazar, are the Eidim Mesira. She needs to bring them.
You're going
to
remember what the content is?
The expectation is yes. But according to Rav Meir, the important part of the get is the get. The get becomes the critical component. The signing of the get now gives the get its efficacy. And from this point going forward, she wants to remarry, according to Rav Meir, She doesn't need the Edim, she just needs the document. And if there was a condition written therein in the get, and it was erased, and it was written on the kind of paper where we wouldn't notice the erasure, so then we have a problem. So Rashi sets us up in terms of understanding how this machlokus between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar now is going to affect whether or not the paper and its forgeability is so important. According to Rav Elazar, it's not so important, because it's not the paper that's creating the divorce. It's the Eidah Mesira. According to Rav Meir, it's super important, because it's the paper itself creating the divorce. Okay, let's finish up. So, V'amar Rav Elazar, lo hichshu Rav Elazar el al altar. And even when Rav Elazar was machshir, it was only for immediate use. Meaning, Rashi says that you brought it to Beis Din on the day that it was handed over to tell us that she was divorced. But if it's at a later point in time, if it's like let's say 10 days later, so then it's not going to be good because we're concerned that maybe it will be forged. Rav Yochanan Amar Afilu Mikana Asar Yamim Dimisa Dehava Beit Tanai Mitker Dekiri. Now, Rav Yochanan is a little more confident with the memory of these witnesses. If there was a condition, they're going to remember. Right? Subject to what you mentioned just a moment ago. Now, in terms of this distinction between Eide Mesira and Eide Chasima, and in terms of this, and in terms of our concern of the paper being forged, we said that according to Rav Elazar, we're not concerned. Because the efficacy of the get is really predicated on the witnesses, not on the paper, not on the document. So the Gemara now points out, quoting Rav Elazar, within the Shita Rav Elazar, this is not going to be true for other shtaros. Other shtaros are there as a raya, as a proof. Right, this pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which we've quoted already a number of times in the Masechta, which is really the cornerstone of contract law, where there a contract was made for the sale of property, there the instruction, the Navi actually says, put in a jug, put it away for a long time, because we're going to need it later. So, when it comes to other shtaros, it has to be written on paper that cannot be subject to forgery, because it's there to serve as a raya for later on. Rav Yochanan Amar Afilu B'Shtaros Facts of Afilu B'Shtaros. Now, Rav Yochanan disagrees on this point as well. Rav Yochanan says, no, even by other shtaros, according to Rav Elazar, it's the Eidah Mesira which are critical. The paper itself is not the critical component. And so, if even by other shtaros, the halacha would be, could be written on paper, even if that paper is forgeable. What about the Pasuk and Navi? The Pasuk and Navi is giving us good, sound advice. You don't need the paper to be around for a long time, but it certainly helps. Right? In other words, years from now, a dispute comes up over the ownership of the property. You're going to bring in the document. Document, if it's not forgeable, if it's written on non-forgeable paper, so then the document will serve as good proof. Not because it was the vehicle in creating that Kenyan, but it's just Eitz HaTov, it's just good sound advice. Okay, stop over here. Today we picked up from the next Mishnah, we talked about Mechuba L'Karka. The Mishnah says it's no good, it's missing a Ketzitza. The Gemara discussed what if it's in a holy pot where halachically it's considered connected to the ground. That's true in other areas of halacha, but in the world of Gittin, it is not considered connected to the ground because it's not a physical action. Just pick up the pot and hand it to her and that would be fine. What about writing on a leaf on a holy plant, on a holy pot? So that was a machlokes d'Abaye and Rava. Rava is machmir, gzeira d'rabbanan. The Gemara then segued into a lengthy discussion of many halachas regarding a pot, a tree, trunks, branches. You know, some of the more classic discussions that happened in the Gemara. I return back to our Mishnah. We got a lesson today in different processings of the hide. Three different processings of the hide. The cloth that we write the Sefer Torah on is only when it goes through all three processings. Short of that, it's unprocessed for various halachas. Mostly have to do with Shabbos. mostly not having to do with getting, and then finally writing a get on forgeable paper where the Chachamim say it's okay. The Gemara assigns that to the Shita Rebbe Lazar, where the Eidim Asira Karte, the paper is not the critical component and not the vehicle that creates severance, therefore it's okay to write it on forgeable paper. As a Tzatova, the Gemara concluded, you should write all documents on paper that is not forgeable.